From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour can be found in a number, 50%. Right now, not even 50% of Rochester City School students graduate high school on time. We want to explore how to change that, how to improve student outcomes, and there's no easy answer, but this hour, we're looking at what parents can do to get more involved and what we all can do to volunteer, even if we don't have a child in school. It's going to be a broad-ranging discussion on how to improve our community. We welcome to the panel Erica Bryant from the Democrat and Chronicle. Erica, nice to see you here.
Thanks for having me.
We also have Willie Robinson, the District Coordinator for the Office of Parent Engagement for Rochester City Schools. Willie, how are you?
Doing great. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for being here. Sherry Hawkins is here. She's a Community Liaison Specialist and the Coordinator of Parent University. Sherry, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Evan, for having me.
Anna Hall is on the line with us. She's the Chief Operating Officer of Uncommon Schools. Anna, thank you for taking the time.
My pleasure.
And Erica Bryan, I'm going to go back to this summer when you wrote a column that said, okay, let's blame the parents. And the seed for this discussion started there. And by the way, if you haven't read Erica's work in the Democrat and Chronicle, she and her colleagues are doing really, really interesting and I think provocative, but provocative in a good way. You get us thinking. And let me quote from your piece and then I'll ask you to explain a little bit more. You talked about the fact that when you write about city schools, when you write about how to improve things, in many ways, you were sort of ignoring these peripheral issues that you'd be in line at the gas station at 10 o'clock and a lady would yell, wake up, nobody told you to stay up all night playing video games to a sleepy child. And you thought, you know, I don't write about that for a reason. And you write, quote, it's because I didn't see the point. Something has gone very, very wrong if a parent does not teach his or her child to count. I honestly thought society had a better chance of fixing school systems to account for such parents' failings than fixing such parents. But the last batch of angry letters I got has made me reconsider this position. So that, you've been hearing from people who wanted you to think about parenting, huh?
Every time I write anything about the city school district, any type of recommendation for ways that the education system could be improved, I get letters and emails from people who are saying, you're missing the main point. You're ignoring the elephant in the room. It's the parents, it's the parents, it's the parents. And so I had a stack on my desk maybe 6 feet high, and finally I decided, okay, you know, I should write about this. And I think that, yes, I mean, everyone knows that you should teach your child to count, you know, and when you have a child who's in school, you should encourage him or her to do his homework and to do the kinds of things that lead to good educational outcomes. And so the question is, how do you do that? And that's the sort of thing that I've been sort of trying to look into this school year.
That column, you talk about the fact that people would write you saying, it's the parents, it's the parents. You finally write the piece and says, okay, I will, let's talk about this. I'll open. What was the feedback to that column?
Well, I got a couple emails were saying, okay, thanks, finally, good. And I think that a lot of times that the emotion that was coming from the letters was anger, and that was the title of the column, something about, okay, let's blame the parents, but then what, you know? Mm-hmm. And so once you sort of get your angry shout out, then what do you do? And how do you turn and sort of channel it into something productive? And that's the question that was not necessarily answered yet, but
yeah, I don't know. I think that's part of the point, is that you're moving it forward, saying, all right, let's acknowledge that we do need better overall, in general terms, we need more active parents, but how do you get there?
So
let me ask Willie Robinson, who's the district coordinator for the Office of Parent Engagement. You read her column, and what comes to mind for you, Willie? I know you're working with parents all the time.
Well, absolutely. So in my mind, one of the things that we're trying to do is change the narrative on what's the difference between engagement versus involvement, right? Because we realize that parents work different times of the day. And so engagement is parents are part of the actual decision-making process. And involvement says we as a district, we as a school have come up with ideas, we've come up with activities, and hey, parents, come along, help us out, help us implement. We want the parents to be both engaged and involved. And so how can we do that? And something that the superintendent is really trying to stress this year is what he's calling the ABCs: attendance, behavior, and coursework. If we can get our kids to be in the seat, We know statistics say that if kids are in the seat 95% of the time, then they have a better chance of succeeding. And so behaviorally, if we have parents that know what's best for their kids and how to educate them, and if they're working in a partnership type scenario with the schools, then they can succeed. And that means they will get their coursework done. And so there's other ways of getting our parents to be engaged. And that's with our Parent Connect as well. That's that online system where parents can see the students' grades, their attendance, and can communicate back and forth with the teachers if, in fact, their work schedule doesn't allow them to come. So I work with the District Parent Advisory Council, and these folks are committed to help and make a positive difference in the district. And so, you know, we have to be careful when we use that broad stroke to say that let's blame the parents. There are some parents that are actively engaged and involved. And so we just have to balance that out.
All right, but a couple of points there, Willie. First of all, you talk about attendance. Attendance is the first of the ABCs, right?
And absolutely.
The superintendent, Bohan Vargas, was on this program and talked about the fact that in the weeks leading up to the first day of school, the district prioritized. They were trying to push a public message of the absolute vital nature of just being there.
Absolutely.
They wanted 95% on day one, and they got 83%. Yes. And they were disappointed. And the superintendent was disappointed. And something is happening at home if 2 out of 10 kids are not showing up on the first day of school, let alone any other day. So when you're talking about these parents who want to be involved, I hear our listeners and they're saying, yes, that's great. But those are the parents who are involved. How do you reach the parents who are sort of absent right now?
So one of the new initiatives that we're starting this year as well is called the Power of Two. And so we're asking all of our principals to reach out to all of the teachers in their buildings and leverage the relationships that they have with those parents in their room and say, identify 2 parents and say, well, I would like for you to help me out and be a part of this parent group. And those 2 parents can reach out to their friends that they have relationships with to be a part as well and help reinforce the whole notion of making sure your kids are in the seats from an attendance perspective.
All right, so we're seeing sort of the seeds, and if you want to weigh in on the conversation on how to improve these outcomes, join the conversation at, it is toll free, and I had to make sure I saw the number in front of me because I've been seeing the pledge numbers. The talk show number is 844-295-TALK. It's toll free, 844-295-8255, or right here in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Sherry Hawkins is a community liaison specialist and a coordinator for Parent University. What's Parent University, Sherry?
Parent University provides training, workshops, and events to all of our district parents to strengthen their skills and their knowledge in supporting their child towards academic success, to build their academic success. So we partner with some of our community agencies to provide different programs as far as in the parenting and early childhood. We do some Common Core. We also talk about financial literacy, health and wellness, cultural responsiveness. So we provide educational trainings for our parents on attendance also, and the different departments within Rochester City School District.
Before I bring Anna Hall into the conversation, let me also, based on what you're telling me about what's available, Sherry, let me ask Willie and Sherry the question that sometimes do we tend to make this conversation about parent involvement too simple, as in, you're either a parent who's involved and a good parent, and a parent who is not involved and a bad parent, as opposed to it's probably a wide range. Some parents are probably not doing an effective job, not involved, but there's probably plenty of parents who maybe want to be but don't know what's available or maybe need some help, a bit of a push. I mean, am I describing it accurately, Willie?
Absolutely. And that's what we're trying to do, is to leverage relationships and relationship building. And we're trying to do some things that are outside of the box, that are a little bit more creative in nature in terms of trying to get our parents to be out and to be a part of these different activities that we have. And so working with the Parent Advisory Council, working with the Bilingual Education Council, and having them to give us feedback, because they are our eyes and ears on the streets, if you will, to try to get information from our parents.
And we've also done some surveys out to our parents to kind of get their feedback as to what time is best for them. We also offer daycare for parents. We also offer bus passes, free bus passes, to ensure that they can get to and fro from. We also try to do some carpooling, networking. So we are trying to provide different avenues. So if they can't, we offer different times, morning sessions, evening sessions, weekend sessions, to try to accommodate. We also do it during the school time at their school, a place where they're familiar with. And we also do it at different community libraries, rec centers.
How often do you meet parents who just want to be and want to do better, want their children to do better, but are thrilled to know what's available and didn't know that these resources were available?
All the time.
All the time.
Because we are here that, wow, I didn't know this was coming out. Mm-hmm. And then we're here on the other end of the spectrum. We got word about this event, but we got it too late, so we couldn't respond. We couldn't adjust our schedules. So we as a district, we own that and say, well, yes, we can do better in that regard. Yes.
Is there a stereotype that city parents don't care?
Go ahead, Sherry.
Yes, I believe that there is a stereotype, but I believe that all of our parents do care. I don't believe that any parent does not care. It's a matter of probably getting the knowledge and leveraging, as Willie said, that relationship to let them know that you're not alone.
Let me go back to Erica's excellent work and quoting later in that piece. Again, if you want to find it online, it's easy to find it. It's called Okay, Let's Blame the Parents. And Erica keeps smiling whenever I say it, because again, it's a bit of a flippant title, but it is moving the conversation forward. And Erica makes the point here that we should focus on programs and policies that parents would want to and want to know what's available. And Erica writes, quote, "The reason that I send my son to school with a good breakfast is because my mother sent me to school with a good breakfast. She also read to me every night. When I expressed interest in being a writer, my father drove me to New York City so I could go to a high school newspaper convention. I didn't do anything to deserve parents who supported my education. Rather, I lucked out in what Warren Buffett calls the Ovarian Lottery. What kind of mother would I be if my mother had abused drugs and me? What if my father had left and my mother had to juggle more than one low-paying job while raising me on her own? What if they didn't make sure I went to bed on time and got up and went to school? What if I hadn't had role models who went to college, got married before they had children, and expected that I would do the same?" So I think, Erica, I take that to mean let's help the parents who are trying to break out of that cycle, the parents who didn't win the ovarian lottery when they were kids.
Right, and I think that what I was trying to say with that passage is that there's a lot of judgment. I see a lot of judgment in terms of, oh, these people are awful. You know, they don't love their children. They shouldn't have had children.
They don't care.
They don't care, so on and so forth. And then, but when you look at your own parenting practices or when you look at your own life, generally people repeat what happened to them when they were growing up. And if you don't have, I mean, if you think about the kids who are growing up now and who don't have anybody to get them to school, I mean, there's a good percentage of the kids who just don't have someone to push them to go to school. And to try to intervene somehow to improve that, to give parents a way to be better parents. And I don't know how you do that, honestly, but I think it should definitely be a goal. Well, as opposed to just excoriating them or
yes.
writing, you know, cruel comments about them and things like that. Because I think you should always try to put yourself in the perspective, okay, well, what if I had had parents that, you know, weren't really there for me?
It's easy to pat myself on the back.
Right.
And say, well, look at all the great work I did.
Right.
When we won the ovarian lottery. I think that's a very fair point. Let me bring in Anna Hall, who's the Chief Operating Officer of Uncommon Schools, who's also on the line with us. Anna, tell us a little bit about what Uncommon Schools is.
So Uncommon Schools is a nonprofit charter management organization. We have 42 schools across New Jersey, New York State, and Massachusetts, five of which are the Rochester Prep Schools in Rochester.
What do you make of the conversation so far, and what kind of parental involvement do you typically see in Uncommon Schools?
Well, first I want to echo a little bit of what Erica's saying and say that, you know, I think that there's a dangerous myth today that being a good parent means that you magically know all the right things to do from mm-hmm. birth all the way until your child is grown and on their own. And I think that does lead to some of this finger-pointing and some confusion on the parts of those of us who want to do things like improve education or improve life outcomes for children, Because if we don't step back and say, there is no magical knowledge, that just by virtue of giving birth to a child or fathering a child, you don't necessarily know all of the things that are going to contribute to the best outcomes for them in their life. And as parents, I think that's very difficult for each of us to admit because of this sort of myth that's out there that you're a bad parent if you don't know all of the things that your child needs. But the reality is that the needs of children vary significantly from child to child and also change dramatically over the course of a child's life. And that's one of the things that I think is particularly challenging in education, is that effective parent involvement for a kindergartner is very different from effective parent involvement for a middle school student or a high school student. And certainly as educators, we see that, but it's not always easy for parents, I think, to know those things or make those transitions. And it's something that we think a lot about at Rochester Prep when we think about effective parent involvement. So certainly at the lower grades, all the way up through middle school, we proactively send parent communication home on a weekly or a biweekly basis, both to report academic progress, but also behavior progress. And so don't assume that a child is necessarily sharing all of that information with a parent, but send it home proactively and assign every child an advisor. So recognizing that, navigating the many different people in a school, particularly when your child is old enough to start having multiple teachers, may be difficult for a parent to know how, who to ask and what to ask. So having those advisors also make weekly or biweekly phone calls home to parents, just to communicate an openness to having conversations and asking questions and being partners in solving problems potentially before they become significant problems. So those are just a couple of the things that we do that I think some may be a little bit different in terms of proactively pushing that information to parents and not just waiting for things like report cards.
Well, now we've framed the conversation and every phone line is lit up. Our community wants to respond here, and so let's start doing that with Gail. Gail, thanks for calling Connections. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm a former city school district teacher. I started under Herman Goldberg, and at that time, parents were grateful, and I was grateful for an attendance teacher. I remember his name. His name was Dwayne Austin, and he got those kids to school, and both all the entire community was grateful. And I'm hoping that City School District is listening to me and will institute attendance teachers again. They cut them out after a number of years, and I don't know why. So perhaps you can talk about that issue.
Gail, thank you. And I'll start with Willie. Attendance teachers, as defined by Gail, what can you say?
So I'm relatively new after 3 years with the district, but there is a major attendance blitz that we have right now, and we do it once a month. But we also have an attendance team that focuses on attendance along with the parent liaisons and homeschool assistants at the school. So what we're trying to do now is have the parent liaisons work specifically with the principals to understand what kids are not at school on any given day. When they come in, there's a computerized system that they can look at and see, well, okay, what students are not present.
And what do you do when you see those that aren't?
And so those that are chronically absent, then they make home visits. They make calls to the parents. And so it shouldn't be right then when they see that there's a problem. But if they see that there is a chronic situation happening and it's before it's 5-10 days, then they're responding after the third day that a kid is not there.
Again, let's go back to a stereotype. One of the stereotypes is for kids who are chronically absent, you can make a home visit or a call, and a parent is likely to say, so what? But is that an unfair stereotype? When parents find out that kids are chronically absent, what's typically the response?
Yeah, so it varies. I mean, you know, it's on both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
So we have to understand, well, what's going on in a parent's life. And so there's a number of different challenges that our parents have. And so we have to try to figure out what can we do to meet their needs and not just call them from a punitive standpoint when we're dealing with an attendance situation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I understand that. Anybody else want to weigh in before we move on here? Okay. Let's keep going down the line. The phones are filled. This is Vicki. Vicki, thanks for calling Connections. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm a city school parent, and hi, Willie and Sherry.
Hey, Vicki.
I'm also a member of the Parent Advisory Council. And the first thing that struck me is here you are having a conversation about parents in the city schools, and you don't have a city school parent on your panel.
That's I don't know if that's okay, well,
that's kind of classic.
No,
and
that's
the city does, you know,
that's fair.
So just an awareness. But Erica, I love your comment about you know, okay, go ahead, blame the parents, but then what do? We can't just abandon those kids, and we've got to work through. And I think one of the keys to getting more parent involvement is relationships, mm-hmm. and that the schools building those relationships, like Willie talked about, the parent liaison, really getting to know that family. Well, why is the kid not coming? Mm-hmm. And the teachers building relationship with the kids so that it's a place where they want to be. That's really where things come from. And just simple stuff. The other day I was at a school-based planning team meeting, and one of the parents mentioned that it was great that her teacher had sent home a math study guide. And the teacher said, oh, well, that was another parent request. So there's an example of a teacher that was really using the relationships that she has with parents to learn and reach out and be able to engage other parents. And that's the kind of really small scale things that can make the difference in parents knowing how to help their kid with math. When you don't know the terms, then, oh, okay, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Here, there you go. And do I feel welcome when I come in and when I call the teacher with a question? Does she follow up and do what I suggest? Wow, okay, this matters. I think that's the kind of thing that we need to do.
Vicki, thanks for the call. And let me first say, as the host, I'll take the point that we could have a parent on this panel, but part of what I want to do in a community-driven show is open up the phones for the community to weigh in, and we'd love to hear from parents. That's part of the process this hour. But certainly I take the point. I mean, I think Willie has been making the point that there's such a broad array of experiences and backgrounds, but we've got to learn from each other. And it sounds like when you've got teachers responding to specific parental requests, that's got to be a huge first point. And let me ask Anna, that point there, when you have a school and a teacher responding to parent needs, that's got to be step one.
Absolutely, and I would echo what Vicki says about the key is building relationships. And I think one of the things that is very important to us at Rochester Prep is the size of our schools. Our schools are small enough that we're able, I think, to have not necessarily more of those relationships, but you know, we make attendance calls on a daily basis. So if a student's absent, there's a call by 9 a.m. that day. And certainly trying to hear from parents what the things are that they need. We took a page out of the City School District book, and a huge hat off to them for leading the way on this. And we hold things called Parent Academies to do exactly what Vicki's talking about, which is to say, you know, you may not know the best way to read to your child, or, you know, you may not totally understand what it is that your kindergartner or even your fifth grader is talking about when you ask them what they did at school today. And so sitting with them and helping them understand some of the nuances of the new Common Core academics and ways that they can be supportive of their students. And certainly those conversations always result in feedback about ways that we can be equipping them with more and better information.
Anna, let me ask you, and let me ask Willie and maybe Sherry, if she wants to weigh in. What happens when you do have a chronically absent student, and because, again, we know that attendance, the district has prioritized attendance getting to that 95% number, and it's not there yet. When you have a chronically absent student, you make a home visit or you contact the household, the response could be anything. But let's say that student continues not to come, and the district starts to realize that, that this student is going to be in trouble. And what is the next step? I mean, when you identify at risk, and again, that's a broad category, but I'll start with you, Anna. What's next? We can talk about parents who tell teachers, hey, I'd love some help on math. I'd love some help understanding Common Core concepts. But that's a different category when the district decides, okay, there's a problem here, and what can we do next?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and certainly one that we also struggle with. I think, first of all, it depends a little bit on how old the student is, right? When a 5-year-old is not at school, that is a parent problem. When a 15-year-old is not at school, that may be a student problem. And so having frank conversations with the student about their responsibility and their morning routines and the importance of attendance is also important, particularly when the student is a little bit older. Especially in cases of attendance when the child is younger, like what folks were saying earlier, having the parent, the first step is we try to have a meeting with the parent, ideally at the school, but it will be at the home. We will do home visits if we can't arrange for them to be able to come in. And again, to the earlier point of the importance of relationships and what Vicki said, talking to parents about what the roadblocks may be in their morning routine for having their student be at school or be at school on time. And sometimes that means even getting into the nitty-gritty details of the fact that, you know, a kindergartner should be getting themselves up and dressed, and how can we help the parent change the habits and the routines of their children as students so that the students are taking more and more responsibility, just in reflection of the fact that, you know, parents do have a lot going on, and part of education and growing up both at home and at school is learning independence and, you know, self-care, and sometimes that alone can make things easier for parents to get a lot of the logistics dealt with in the morning.
Willie, how would you address that same issue?
Yeah, I think what it comes down to is parents really will not be responsive to you until you truly show them that you care. Mm-hmm. And I think the general theme that we've all been talking about is relationships. And once you get beneath the surface to find out what's really going on with why mom is not bringing a third grader to school or a kindergartner to school, there may be some other underlying issues that need some that they may need some support with. And then with the older kids, that's certainly a truancy matter. And so we have to, again, even with the students, we have to get beneath the surface and understand what are the true needs of this student to understand why they are not coming. It may be bullying. It may be, you know, transportation. It may be a number of our kids in the district, unfortunately, are dealing with some very, very serious situations. Some kids are trying to figure out where they're going to sleep tonight, where they're going to eat, you know. And so we have to make sure that we have the necessary services in place to address their needs.
Are we getting better?
We're definitely getting better.
Sherry?
Yes. And I think, too, I just wanted to touch on that building relationship, because that is very key. And I think as a part of Parent University, that's what we definitely try to do. We try to house, we have a free health and wellness program that we just started at the Gantt Center. It gives the parents a different environment. We've invited teachers to come out and exercise and to learn about healthy habits, and we do that every Tuesday from 6 to 7:30. We also provide healthy snacks for the parents after. We also, for the Common Core, we do family do the math nights. We found last year that we had a couple sessions, but families wanted to actually have some hands-on where they're learning the math. So this year, we've restructured it to actually let them know. So we host those at different schools for all families. We'll have one at number 5 this coming Monday from 5 to 6:30 p.m. And they can get all this information on our website at www.rcsdk12.org. So we are trying to leverage relationships with our parents also through having things outside of the school building at different communities, which I believe, as Willie said, having that relationship with them and finding out what's going on is probably the number one step for us to move forward, because if we don't know the dynamics and they're not able to trust us or they're not able to feel comfortable, then sometimes they kind of shy away from opening up.
Right. I like what my boss, Jerome Underwood, always says. How do you boil an ocean? One cup at a time. We have to figure out specifically what are their specific needs and address them one cup at a time.
Before we get to a very, very short break, let me turn it back to Erica Bryant, the Democrat and Chronicle journalist and columnist who sparked this discussion. And look, you wanted to push this conversation in a direction of trying to help parents and trying to understand ways that we all can do better. What are we missing here? I'm the one leading the conversation, but it was your column that sparked it. What are we missing?
I would what came to me as we were talking about getting behind what the issues are is that in a city where with such a high percentage of child poverty, a lot of times the issues that you're going to find are things that are not really solvable by teachers or by the school district or by educators. As a matter of fact, one of the things that I'm working on is trying to get five stories from five kindergartners who've been absent. And one mother that I've found is basically her kids have moved three times since school started. Mm-hmm. And so it's basically a transportation issue. And those problems are not simple to solve. The homelessness and then the stress that comes from homelessness and having to move from couch to couch and for five-year-olds and the stress behind that, how do you help her?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Go
ahead, Anna. Yep.
Say also very quickly, when you ask the question, what are we missing? This is not by any means to let any of us as educators off the hook, but I do want to point out that there are five very important years that occur in a child's life before they ever sit in a kindergarten classroom. And there have been numerous studies done about things like the 30 million word gap, that a low-income student has heard 30 million fewer words and even has had thousands of fewer instances of encouragement versus discouragement by the time they're a student in school. And so I do think that that's an important thing to highlight. And certainly, also falls into the category of a very, very important but difficult to address and difficult for a school district or school to address who are designed to start serving students at age 4 or 5.
If you want to see a remarkable TED Talk on this subject, check out the TED Talk on how a child learns to speak. That is worth watching. And I watched it yesterday. Take the time to watch that. You will see things in there that I had never seen before. Short break, and back with our panel and your phone calls. If you're waiting on the line, we're coming to you next as we talk about parental involvement and improving Rochester schools for students and the outcomes, especially in urban areas. This is member-supported public radio. Coming up in our second hour, Senator Ted O'Brien joins us in studio for the hour. He's fresh off a heated debate with his challenger, Rich Funke, the Republican former broadcaster, trying to unseat him in a vital New York State Senate race. Ted O'Brien sits down with us to explain his positions on the issues, and he responds to some of the claims made by Rich Funke in yesterday's debate. You can join the conversation next hour.
Absentee voting is meant to encourage participation in elections, but tens of thousands of mail-in ballots are rejected because of simple mistakes.
It's absolutely heartbreaking because the only thing worse than people not voting is people trying to vote and having their ballots go uncounted.
The difficulty of making every vote count, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4.
Let's reintroduce our panel, and we're going to get to your phone calls in a second. Erica Bryant is here from the Democrat and Chronicle. Willie Robinson is the District Coordinator for the Office of Parent Engagement. Sherry Hawkins is a Community Liaison Specialist and a Coordinator for Parent University. And on the phone, we've got Anna Hall, the Chief Operating Officer of Uncommon Schools. Bernard in Fairport, you've been waiting. Thanks for calling Connections.
Yeah, I want to kind of reinforce what Vicki said earlier about the parents' involvement. Several months ago, you had Yubonsky, the union member, on your radio show, and they talked about having dinner with the mayor and so on and so forth. And I called in and said, well, you need to invite some parents to discuss, to be at the meeting or the dinner between you and the supervisor. So I guess one of my questions or comments is, it seems to me that your organization, the people you've got there, are aware of the parents. They seem to want to say there's a responsibility for the parents. And someone said earlier there may be some problems that the parents can't solve. But in a lower income environment, it seems to me to be very difficult for someone to say to their employer when they're making minimum wage, well, I have to go to the school and meet with my teacher. So I'm wondering, or my student teacher, so I'm wondering, is that a problem that we have that we can't solve, or is there a way to solve it? Can the system be more flexible that not only can they invite the teacher, but they can respond to the parents, but they can respond to the problems that the parents are having in our society? Or is this just something that, you know, our industry and commercial environment is basically going to help destroy the educational environment? And thanks for the show. And again, next time, let's have some parents.
you got it, Bernard. But I think great questions. And let me start with I'll start with Willie. Willie, what do you think?
I mean, you're absolutely right. Parents should be at the table, and that's one of the initiatives that we try to always do. We raise the red flag to say, hey, whenever it's any new initiatives come to the forefront, we always say, hey, we need to make sure that parents are at the table. So I totally agree, and we're working on our end to try to make sure that that happens.
Sherry, want to add anything there?
I just wanted to add what Willie said. We are working very hard. We have our Parent Advisory Council and our Bilingual Educational Council, who works very hard to ensure that parents are at the table of, you know, the board committees, any decision that the Rochester City School District. So we do try to involve our school-based planning teams, which is the governing body at each school, where parents are allowed to help set the atmosphere and the plan for that particular school. So we are trying to move forward in that and to definitely get more parents involved, and through the Parent University offering courses to help the parents understand their role as a school-based planning team, because sometimes it can be a little, you know, intimidating for some of our parents. So we want to try to make sure that we bring it down to the level where they can understand and that they're able to productively participate in the decision making.
Go ahead, Erica.
But I think that the caller makes a good point when he talks about the fact that a parent who is making minimum wage or making $8 an hour or $9 an hour and wants to support a family is going to have to be working. There's no way you can work 40 hours a week. You have to work more than that. And then when you have those kind of structural problems, it impacts, it gets beyond the question of, oh, this person's a bad parent. It's the fact that you have to choose between earning a living and, you know, being there to get your kids on the bus in the morning. And when you're making $8 an hour, your options for childcare are limited. So those are things that have to be fixed on a greater societal level.
Yeah, absolutely, because those are, as the caller was saying, there's some things that we certainly don't have any control over in terms of talking to the employer to let them go for the day or come in a little later to be a part of the different meetings that we may have. And so that's why we as a school district have to try to figure out what can we do creatively to make sure that times are set that's convenient for parents.
All right, let me grab Megan in Rochester, I think. Megan, go ahead. Thanks.
Hi. I am calling just to, share with you that I think what you're talking about today is important, but it seems that what we really need to do in this community is start to talk about the value of parents and families in the city. Over and over again, we continue to really bring to light the negative things that are going on. And I think that what this community needs to do is to really start to look at the accomplishments and celebrate and promote our schools and stop looking at all of the things that, you know, this community is saying that the city schools are not doing. We have parents, we have students, we have families at every school in this district who are valuing education. But when we look at Rochester as a whole, we are devaluing our students, and that's not fair. And I think that you will find parents will feel better when they're not always on the defensive in this community. And I think it starts with shows like yours and the newspapers and Berkeley Breen, you know, and all these reporters who want to attack our teachers and our families and our students. If we could have a positive story blitz and start to really celebrate the good work that is going on, I think that you will see parents will feel better about getting involved at the schools. If they keep hearing over and over and over again, you know, how terrible the Rochester City Schools are, why would they want to be involved?
But Megan,
why would they feel proud?
No, but let me also just ask, or just sort of try to make a point, because I don't disagree with you.
Okay.
That's why I've spent part of this hour saying, what are the stereotypes? And the stereotypes are unfair. The stereotypes are that parents in the city don't care. Well, that's totally unfair. The stereotypes miss the circumstances. The stereotypes miss the fact that a child, as Erica pointed out in her column, who comes from a family that didn't have two parents at home, or a parent with drug problems, or a parent, all kinds of issues, is more likely to end up in that cycle. And what are the good things that are happening? What's Parent University doing? What are the programs that are available? Instead of saying the city is hopeless, and we're trying to say we do think the stereotypes are unfair, and we think there are ways that parents can start doing more, and we want to put those ideas out there with a community conversation, along with saying, hey, Sherry, what's out there? What is available that parents should know about? I just want you to know my perspective as a host.
Great, absolutely. And I think that there's also this perception that if you go out to the suburbs that every parent is in school every day, which is not the case. And what happens is when there are resources out in the suburban schools that, you know, we don't have in city schools, it makes a difference. I mean, there are parents who just show up in the suburbs, you know, on parent-teacher conference day, and that's it. That's the level of involvement that you see in school, but yep. they're able to do that support at home. So I think there's also this, you know, we're looking at things very differently when there are things that are the same, but due to lack of resources or poverty, that we are, you know, judging people unfairly. And I think we really need to change the way that we value our families and our students in the city.
Megan, thanks for the call. I certainly appreciate the points. Sherry, you want to weigh in there?
Yes. I just want to talk a little bit about what Megan said. And I know under the supervision of Superintendent Dr. Vargas, he has implemented 81 sports teams. We have a drum corps and trying to enhance our music and arts department, in which Parent University ties into that by hosting two things at the Memorial Art Gallery to promote music and arts for our family. He has also implemented the full day pre-K kindergarten, reading by third grade, and made that very, very, very important in the focus on reading. So Parent University also ties into that by all of our courses and events that we offer. We're always giving out free books to our parents at any grade level. So the City School District under the Superintendent Dr. Vargas have implemented some awesome things for our parents in which we're trying to, you know, accommodate, along with the City of Rochester, who have provided some after-school programs so that parents who do work long hours, that they're able to you know, have their kids in a safe place. And also, we go out to some of these rec centers that the children are at and provide things under Parent University.
And Erica, to the point that Megan's making, if you live in the city versus the suburbs, you're more likely to be in a minimum wage job or a lower paying job. And to Megan's point, sometimes we idolize the suburbs as if every parent is in the school every day and all these things. And the point is, you're more likely to be in an affluent situation in the suburbs. And that doesn't mean Rochester City parents aren't caring. It means they may be working longer hours. And maybe that's a socioeconomics. Maybe that's an economics question. Maybe that's a minimum wage question. Maybe that's all of those things.
I mean, it's definitely a socioeconomic question. Yeah. And I think that, yes, it's important to focus on the positives, but you can't ignore the facts. We've got, I think it was 5% of the students in third through eighth grade were not considered to be reading at grade level. I mean, that is very serious. And I think that we have to look at the reasons why that statistic exists. And there are certainly many, many excellent families in the city, many excellent schools in the city, many excellent parents in the city. And we could write about them all day, but to do that in the face of the major problem that exists would be negligent, I believe.
Yeah, I don't think it's tearing down. I think it's saying, let's be productive. Let's not let stereotypes govern. Let's look at the real
issues. We got to look at what needs to be sort of worked on.
I've got it less than 90 seconds, but Chloe, go ahead. Last call of the hour.
Hi. I wanted to call because I'm sad this hasn't been brought up in this wonderful discussion. I'm a parent that's moving out of the city because I did not like being pregnant. I will not have many children, and I'm not taking any chances with this one. And there is no, I know I have lots of friends. Both my parents are all teachers for the city school district. There's no classroom management that is taught. We've identified so many of these problems that are can be common in the city school district, but there's no help for these teachers. It's just like, oh, here are the problems, and good luck figuring it out. Professional development is certainly offered. However, it's not required. So there's lots of teachers in the district and lots of teachers at charters that are just not getting any help with these problems that we know are happening in the city.
All right, Chloe, I appreciate the call only because we're running out of time. Willie quick and then Anna. Go ahead, Willie.
I agree to a degree that PD's art professional development is certainly offered to our teachers, but it takes all of us working together. So we need our parents to be actively engaged to and schools welcoming our parents to come in and assist in that area as well, because it takes a village, you know. And so with our classrooms, certainly there are challenges. I'm not going to try to divorce myself from that, but we certainly need to work together.
And Anna, real briefly, go ahead. You're going to hear the music, but you got 30 seconds, so go.
I couldn't agree more. And certainly one of the major aspects of, that we think makes us successful is that our teachers do come in for 3 weeks in August for professional development, and we have an unapologetic focus on discipline and classroom management. Just because, as Erica said, we can't ignore these problems, even recognizing that there are bright spots. And certainly for both parents and students, those who are doing the right things every day, we have to live in the situation that we know that that's not always going to happen.
Yeah, Anna, thank you for the time today, and thanks for joining the conversation. Willie Robinson, Erica Bryant, Sherry Hawkins, and thank you all, and let our community know. We couldn't even get close to all the comments in. So let's come back and do it again. We'll bring more parents in, and we'll continue this important conversation on Connections right here on Member Supported Public Radio. Short break.